Civil discussion is a phrase used more commonly these days as the effort is made to bring down the intensity behind arguments among polarized communities. And it seems to have been harder to come by in the nearly 3 years of the Trump administration as sides have dug in their heels even deeper for their side of the argument. Those examples are being seen on college campuses around the country as some controversial speakers are uninvited and some students feel unsafe amidst ideas and rhetoric they find scary. Robbie Suave of Reason Magazine writes about those concepts in his new book, Panic Attack: Young Radicals in the Age of Trump. I spoke with him recently when he was in the Valley and started by asking whether there's a different kind of activism since President Trump took office.
Yes, I think so. For one thing, any sort of election cycle would have naturally inflamed kind of tensions on college campuses. And our political discourse is so tribalized around just two tribes. I mean, the very structure of the system pushing everyone into one camp or the other leads to these tensions. There's very little room for even dissent or debate within those two tribes. You are really being encouraged to self-segregate into one or the other. And of course, our country is nicely evenly split between them. So the tensions are running high. Of course, President Trump is a unique figure, even in sort of the history of political discourse, in that he's crass and he's brash and he's in your face. And he really, really, really makes people who don't like him upset. So I'm describing events that are happening around the same time as Trump's election and Trump's campaign. But even before Trump arrived on the scene, I was taking notice of changes in the kind of activism on college campuses or the tactics being used, the underlying ideology, and there was a increasing hostility, from my perspective, toward some principles that people on the left, leftist activists, used to hold in quite high regard, particularly free speech and due process. And, you know, this isn't across the board. This is not at every college campus by any stretch of the imagination. It's not even every event. But there have been a number of troubling, from my perspective, shutdowns or censorship incidents at some very lofty and high-profile institutions, led by the students themselves, the activists themselves, not all of them, but a small kind of cabal of very radical students who've been kind of successful at I think, hijacking the conversation or making it difficult to disagree with them publicly.
The cynic or the skeptic in me says, who's benefiting from that then? Because it always appears that if, let's say, the progressives or liberals are acting like this, then there's reality to that. And then in this case, it would be those on the opposite side, you talk about two camps, that will play it up as much as possible to make it look just how out of touch they are. So based on the reporting you've done, based on people you've talked to, how real is all this and how much of it is liberals saying this about conservatives and vice versa?
There's tons of bad acting on both sides. Partly I'm critiquing the left because I see them as having moved away from principles they once hold. And also there are more left-leaning people on campus, so there's more leftist activism. So there's just because of the disproportionate numbers, there's more sort of going on to critique. But of course, the right has sort of risen to the challenge of embracing just the same kind of censorship tactics. And also they're bringing speakers who are inflammatory, who maybe wouldn't even actually have anything interesting to say in some cases because they know they're going to be shut down, and then they're going to say, look how intolerant the left is, and they'll, I don't know, fundraise or they'll recruit based on that effort.
Well, I think that's it. How honest do you think the debate is? I mean, honest in quotes a bit, but how honest is it really about the differences between the core messages and how much of it is about each side sort of wanting to get the hackles up and raise money?
Yes, I think particularly on the right, the element of it that's a grift is large. On the left, it's sincere belief to some degree, I think, among the activists, but they're not thinking of it in terms of, you know, so in research for this book, when I would ask them things like, well, why do you think, you know, stopping Ben Shapiro or Charles Murray, whoever it is, from speaking is a good tactic? Don't you think that makes other people more sympathetic to Charles Murray and not to you? You look very fragile and weak, and you're sort of putting yourself out there to be mocked because you seem so intolerant that you won't even let him speak. And they say to me, well, we're not thinking about it in terms of who is more likely to respond negatively or positively to this. They're thinking of it in terms of safety, broadly defined as to include emotional comfort. So they are saying it might make us look bad, whatever, but if someone with right-wing views speaks on this campus, there will be people who we are sympathetic to who feel unsafe or who feel emotionally disturbed or are not, or have no a lack of comfort because of this. So we are protecting their safety, again, safety broadly defined, and thus we are justified in stopping these things from happening. And that's a very, that is a different new kind of way of thinking about these strategies that I, again, I think it should be criticized and really explored.
As part of your book, the title has the term radical. How would you define radical in this age? And do you think it has dramatically changed from 60s to the 80s to today?
I mean, I think it has changed. Radical is a squishier word, I think, than woke or intersectionality. So you could, you know, you could describe, I guess I'm using it to describe people whose views fall out well outside the mainstream. Because this is a moderate country. This country is full of a lot of moderate people, moderate Democrats even. I mean, Joe Biden is the runaway favorite to win the Democratic nomination, because guess what? There are a lot of moderate and even conservative religious older voters who love Biden. If you were only reading New York Magazine, The Washington Post, the kind of media, if you were only checking Twitter, if you were only checking the sources of information that are disproportionately dominated by young progressive people, you would think, you know, you would think nobody could like Joe Biden. There's no way he's radical enough. And that has a distorting effect kind of on our dialogue, because the kinds of people I'm describing, I'm not at all saying they are. There are a lot of them. There's very few of them. It's amazing how much influence they've had over the couple, the last few years, given how few of them there are. So I'm talking about them. And now, I don't consider radical a negative thing necessarily. I mean, I'm a libertarian. I have some pretty radical beliefs. I think I'm honest about the fact that my views are probably well, on certain issues at least, are well outside the mainstream.
So though you said a lot of this activism and some of the troubling aspects of things going on campuses started before President Trump. Let's say President Trump does not win in 2020. Does some of this stuff shift? Do we see more conservative-related activism that is there, but perhaps that ramps up more, especially if you see perhaps a liberal Democrat win the White House? Give me a couple scenarios based on what you
think. Yes. I think if Joe Biden gets the nomination and then loses to President Trump, I think the woke radical people I'm describing will say, we told you, this is what happened because you didn't listen to us, you didn't nominate a bold, progressive. So if that's the reality, that will embolden the kind of people I'm describing. If Biden is the nominee and then wins in a landslide, they're going to be disappointed, and maybe they'll have a moment of reckoning, like, okay, our view is more fringe than we realize. There's some sense in which Biden becoming president would just be like a going back to like a little bit of a more normal time. Can we put the rabbit back in the hat, the cat back in the box, whatever animal in whatever container you have? I don't know. It would feel crazy almost to do some kind of reset. And Trump's not going away, even if he's not president.
That's Robbie Suave of Reason Magazine. He's author of the new book, Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump.